This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Alex von Goldstein and Rabbit. We're going to be discussing the second presidential debate and some other topics with Rabbit's alt-left. And we're also going to be talking about Milo later on and how that ties in. Great having you guys on the show.
Thanks. Great to be back.
Thanks for having me on, Robert.
So the second debate was last night. It was hosted by CNN. It was like an Anderson Cooper. It was like a town hall format for undecided voters who ask questions. And obviously the debate was biased against Trump like the other one was. But if you look at Trump's overall performance, I think he did much better. He was very strong, to the point. He was also a lot more, he came in there like combative from the beginning, as opposed to kind of the last time he tried to play nice. And I think, like, I can understand why he did that to start things off, but since Hillary attacked him, then he came back in there. So the whole thing, like, it got pretty, like, Jerry Springer level. But my overall take of the performance of Trump, I think Trump did well, but I don't necessarily think either Trump or Hillary won over these undecided voters. I think both of them basically are kind of like strengthening and rallying up their own base, but neither of them, I think, really did a whole lot to get these kind of like undecided voters who the debate was catered to. Alex, you watched the debate as well. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you to an extent. I disagree with you in that I think Trump was a clear winner. I think Trump really showed a higher performance level than last time. You know, I feel like the first debate, he was like we said last time, he was a bit inarticulate.
And he didn't seem totally prepared the first debate.
No, it was almost like he rode his wave of cockiness, just in having beaten everyone beforehand, thinking, okay, I can just ride this to beat Hillary Clinton. And now I think, well, he also, I had heard that him and Nigel Farage were talking. Farage was apparently like training Donald Trump.
For this debate. You called him a silverback.
Oh, really? But I didn't look too much into that. I just know Farage was a... Because I think Nigel Farage is an amazing speaker. I think he's really a really clear speaker and really gets to the point when he's talking. I think he's a great orator. And he carries, you know, a certain charisma with him. And Donald Trump does that too, but his inarticulate nature sometimes, you know, he doesn't... Sometimes he's a little bit too cocky and it just doesn't totally work. But I think after Nigel sort of, I don't know, he sort of, Trump seemed like he was himself. It was funny. You know, he didn't seem like the Donald Trump that I saw last night was closer to like the Donald Trump that I'd seen on Howard Stern or something. You know, because he was revealed maybe by the get him by the pussy comment. he was just revealed and he's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm Donald now.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a lot of the ways, like, you have to be yourself. If you try to pretend like you're someone you're not, then people will call you a phony. I know Trump kind of, he's tried different things. He tried the more presidential thing.
Yeah, the Manafort era Trump.
He's been very kind of a crude. And I think he had, whatever you think about his persona, he did have a level of consistency in his demeanor in this debate.
Yeah, I definitely think so. It was almost like he was like an angry father or something. Like when Hillary Clinton would go and talk to the audience members, they would ask a question and she would go right up to them and talk to them. But Trump, he would just walk around the set, you know, like go behind his chair and look at Hillary when he was answering the question of the person. And it was sort of like he was kind of you know, he was like going to a higher level of performance. He wasn't playing the kind of clean politics that he was, you know, trying to play the first time around. He was like being, he was being aggressive.
Yeah, he brought up everything.
Yeah, exactly.
All the WikiLeaks revelations.
Yeah, he brought up, he said George Soros.
Speeches to Wall Street, the Bill Clinton sex scandals.
He named George Soros, Robert. He said his name.
Screwing over the Bernie supporters. He brought up pretty much almost everything.
Yeah, I mean, and that was really good. And you could see every time Hillary Clinton tried to one-up him, and realized he was just gonna go for the punch when he had it. Every time she realized he was actually gonna do it, she just put this fake smile on her face.
Yeah.
And it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the more calm that she tried to seem, yeah.
Debate, Trump actually did sort of allow Clinton to derail the debate and allow her to grill him, but I noticed he learned from that mistake and he didn't allow her to do that this time.
Well,
he always turned back to her.
I mean, that also could just be some kind of art of the deal media narrative manufacturing. You know, because Donald Trump knows how to create media narratives, much like how the people that are, you know, running this narrative now create these media narratives. So Trump is just creating a counter-narrative, and I honestly, maybe I'm just a nut job, but I really could see Trump being the kind of person who would think, okay, first debate, I will not be at the top of my game, I will mess up, second debate is when I'll get her, third debate, I'll come out totally on top. Because, I don't know, do you remember there was the comment he made about the taxes? He's like, I don't pay the taxes.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, my God, Donald Trump doesn't pay taxes. And Hillary seems, you know, like she's the winner on that point. But then a couple days later, there's the WikiLeaks stuff released. And, all, you know, there's people are digging in the files to see stuff Bill Clinton did years ago. And apparently Trump was able to, you know, get around paying taxes because of something Hillary Clinton passed. You know, it was a weird boomerang.
Did you get the link I sent you about WikiLeaks about Clinton's private speeches to Wall Street?
Well, yeah, she said she wanted to make a hemispheric, hemispheric area with a common market and open borders or something?
Oh, yeah.
A hemispheric market with... No, she said a hemispheric market with free trade and open borders, which is just, you know, proving, like, Alex Jones right. You know, that's just the total, like, new... It's almost like these people are just open about their agenda and what they want to do, and... Those of us who maybe were 10 years ago were thrown into a conspiracy basket are now, I don't even know what we're seen as, but these people are just defending, like, universalism and, like, a new world order. Like, that's what they're doing. The people that are defending Hillary.
Hillary's policy, she really kind of combines, like, the absolute both of like, the left and the right.
The worst sides of both, like a neoliberal and neoconservatism.
Well, yeah, like basically like this kind of a cutthroat corporate capitalism where people are getting laid off from their jobs. There's no job security with like all these massive affirmative action programs against whites and men. And then this like a neoconservative foreign policy. I mean, whatever you say about Bernie Sanders, he did a lot of his policies would have helped just ordinary working class.
Well, no, I mean, Bernie Sanders represents like a, you know, a threat to the system, even though, you know, some people wouldn't want to hear that. I mean, I remember listening to William Lind talk earlier this year, and I think it was when Sanders might have still been in the race, and William Lind said, you know, someone like Donald Trump could change things. Someone like Bernie Sanders could change things. As far as Sanders goes, though, I kind of do side more with, like, Paul Gottfried's assessment of him, that Sanders is basically just, you know, average middle-of-the-road politician who just has his talking points. But I do think he was coming from the right place as far as, you know, stopping
Absolutely.
Things like TPP and...
Wouldn't the ideal be to kind of combine like the best attributes of Trump and Sanders, but no one has come out and put that forth.
Yeah, that's what we were basically talking about with this radical centrism stuff. I mean, when you were going over it with Bay Area guy, you know, you were sort of saying going with the old school sort of 90s way of, you know, Buchanan and Nader. And if you just look at this election, you have it in you know, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. Like, they both, Donald Trump represents a clear lineage to the Pat Buchanan campaigns of the 90s.
Well,
and Bernie Sanders is very similar to Ralph Nader.
Like Ron Unz, who we interviewed, and another person is the former Democratic Senator Jim Webb, who ran in the primary, and I think he later became an independent. Both of those individuals kind of fit into that profile we're talking about, but both of them were kind of marginalized electorally.
Well, maybe there could be some sort of radical centrist third party that was like a combination of the Libertarian Party and the Green Party or something. And that also had some hard right angles.
The Reform Party, which is defunct, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Reform.
Like that.
David Duke in the Reform Party, too. It was like
it was
pretty,
a bunch of people.
It was
David
diverse.
Duke, Jesse
yeah.
Ventura, Donald Trump, Pat Buchanan, Ralph Nader.
Yeah, I think that's like, that's the problem with the Reform Party, though, is when it's like, when it's called something just so nonspecific, like the Reform Party, it's like, well, yeah, a lot of people are against reform, but like, what kind of reform are we talking about here? Like, none of those people had the same vision for like the kind of society they want to live in. Like, that was the problem with it.
That's true. That is true, but it sort of serves the role maybe of like a meta party, where just the Reform Party could mean that they're against the establishment. And like on a local basis, Reform Party candidates could match the interest of the people that live in that area. Like, that's a way of going about it. Keith Preston talks about that a lot in like his books, like the idea of like creating like big tent sort of mega parties. And then you could have like, you know, like Ryan Falk too had the All Nations Party. So it's like, if you had something that was like an All Nations Party, you could have like a white nationalist faction of that. You could also have like a libertarian faction of it. You could have different people basically working together against the system under one banner. But though I do see how that could be problematic as well.
Yeah, there'd be like a lot of infighting. I mean, we're going to get to this kind of later, but even within these different movements, like the alt-right and alt-left, I mean, they're more ideologically specific than something like radical centrism, and even those movements as small, like the alt-left is very small, and even that movement has a lot of infighting. I do want to comment more on the debate topics. So Trump actually did really get to Clinton on foreign policy, and he challenged her support for the rebels and for toppling Assad and her stance on Putin. And she brought, it's interesting because she brought up this dead boy in Syria who was killed in an airstrike against ISIS.
I don't think he was killed. That's the picture she was talking about, right? Of that little boy that was in the back of the fire engine. You know, the picture of the gray, he has a gray face and he's bleeding.
Oh yeah,
she brought up that image, but I'm on Facebook. I'm part of like some groups where it's like all these like Arab nationalist guys just sharing all these memes, and one of the guys posted a video of some guys in Syria picking that kid up, putting him in the back of the truck, moving back, taking the photo. Like, it's that photo is an anti-Assad piece of propaganda that is directed against Bashar al-Assad. That photo is, you know, this child, you know, injured in Syrian airstrike. Well, I mean, why don't you show pictures of Aleppo beheading children? You know, that's, you know, these people are you know, killers. They're barbaric. And Bashar al-Assad is trying to protect his people And Hillary Clinton is, you know, she's picked the wrong side in that war. So, you know, for me, even like, I think I can make like a moral choice as far as going for Trump in this war situation in Syria, you know, because it's like, you know, you could say, what is Donald Trump going to do? He's going to deport Mexicans and he's going to ban Muslims. But it's like, you know, much to the chagrin of like a lot of alt-right people, it seems like he wouldn't really go as hard as they think he would, as far as, you know, physical removal, as people, so to speak.
She's going to kill people. She's going to kill people. She's far more hawkish than Obama was. Obama had a lot of foreign policy blunders, but in some instances, yeah, showed some constraint. Hillary Clinton would be far worse. I mean, she would be like on a George Bush level or possibly even worse. I mean, she could even instigate a war with Russia. Who knows?
But well, she brings up Russia in a negative context every 5 minutes, you know? It seems like she wants war with Russia, you know, because Donald Trump said you have Iran, Russia, and Syria. Like, I never hear that in the mainstream media, that Iran, Russia, and Syria are fighting ISIS, and they have a coalition against ISIS. And Donald Trump is...
He has defended Russia. That's the first thing I've heard him put Iran in there.
Yeah.
Because I know, I mean, obviously he has bashed Iran a lot, and he has had to kind of placate the neocons. And whenever you think about the Iran deal, putting that aside, I mean, Iran is, along with Syria and Russia, is part of the axis that is a counterbalance to ISIS and Wahhabism.
Iran is a rational actor. You know, this is not a country that goes around and invades other nations. Iran is a rational actor. And you have, like, the Anglo order, the Atlanticist order, that's like...
Kristen calls it the Anglo-Zionist Wahhabi Axis.
Yeah, Anglo-American Zionist Wahhabi Axis. Or, like, in Dugin's terms, be like the Atlanticists. And what's basically happening is, they ruled the world for a bit there. And now the rule is over. And you have this other side of, like, Eurasia that you know, Russia is a part of that, Syria is a part of that. You know, the sort of Turco-Muslim world, you know, that Russia. And then later on, I see, like, China. But that's where the world is going. That's the 21st century. So Donald Trump gets that. But Hillary Clinton just wants to hold on to this, you know, materialist dream. You know, it's bullshit.
I mean, with the whole thing with that boy who Hillary tried to say was killed. These neocons and like a lot of pro-Israel Democrats, like, they will point out that Hamas uses a human shield, so when Israel does airstrikes against Hamas in Gaza, civilians get killed. And I mean, I'm not disputing that. That's probably true. But at the same time, when Assad and Russia... Putin do airstrikes against ISIS, and ISIS uses human shields, and they happen to get killed. There's no level of a consistency in their argument.
No, and there's this side of neocon thinking that essentially views Arabs as inhuman, like they're demonic or something. You know, there's this boogeyman of all. I mean, I am very weary of refugees. I am very weary of multiculturalism in general. You know, I'm skeptical about it. Like, I have friends from all over, and, you know, I have different views on some of this stuff, but, like, I am skeptical of multiculturalism. And what I'm just saying, though, is that, like, you know, these people, like, they train Americans to view Arabs like demons. I mean, yes, there's a lot of threat within radical Islamic terrorism or whatever, but, you know, there are other threats in the world, you know.
And also Trump, when Clinton tried to bring up the Khan family and the Khan family, I mean, they have this whole background as, like, lobbyists for Saudi Arabia and as immigration attorneys who specialize in, like, Muslim immigration. But his response was that if he was president at the time, their son would still be alive because there wouldn't have been an Iraq war, and he called her out for supporting the Iraq war.
Well, I would just say that. I mean, one thing that I think is really troubling is how easily manipulated emotionally people are by these images. Like, I see people constantly reposting them and things on Facebook with these comments like, oh, you know, look at this little boy. Like, how can you, you know, monsters not, how can we not take him in? Like, what is wrong with you? And it's like, they're just so easily manipulated emotionally by images that it makes you wonder, like, gee, like, these people are just useless, you know, like, if they're that easily manipulated by a piece of propaganda. And I'm going back to the debates, a lot of the feedback I've seen is that, you know, like, within our community, it's like, it's basically like, oh, you know, yeah, Trump destroyed her or whatever. But like these normies are still talking about like the pussy comment. And like, if you could vote for a man who says that he would grab a woman's pussy, like, I don't know what's wrong with you. Like, I just can't respect you. And it's like, you know, there's no weighing of the cons of like, well, this other person, you know, they want to provoke a war with Russia and invade all these Middle Eastern countries. But, you know, this guy said something, and they're total hypocrites.
Well,
most people talk like that. Most people are too stupid.
And I mean, you could almost kind of make an argument for limiting, like, who should have a right to vote. It's a controversial opinion, but maybe.
No, we need to limit democracy. We need to, like,
there should be like a basic test, not just like an IQ test, but to test people's like intellectual capabilities.
Just some limit on democracy, because I feel that this, I mean, like I wrote this the other day. I was thinking this, that like these people who call themselves liberals, they're not liberals at all. They're like left wing libertarians. They're people that want individual freedom for everyone, but they want individual freedom within the framework of like liberalism, leftism, posism. Like, you can only be that. You know, it's like, you can do whatever you want as long as it's posed, but don't tell me what the fuck to do. Don't tell me what to do. And that's what their whole thing is. Like, they're nuts. It's a religion. And that's how they think.
Yeah, it's almost like they're part of a tribe in itself.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
not,
they are.
Not just like it's like a pathetic kind of tribe, because it's just based on like a red or a blue, you know. So it's like Hillary's on the blue team, so I don't really care if she's going to go to war with all of these countries or if she's in bed with all these corporations. Like, she's on the blue team, you know. So therefore, like, you know, Trump is evil because he made this one comment, even though he agrees with what I'm supposedly supposed to agree with on 90% of these other issues.
And then, like, there's even this one where it's like, people feel so attached to their party loyalty, like sometimes even intergenerational. It's sort of like how someone's like, oh, my dad was a Red Sox fan, so I'm a Red Sox fan. It's like, my dad was a Democrat, so I'm a Democrat. They think like that. And some of these people, like, they can't even imagine voting for another party because they're like, ew, I could never vote for a Republican. Like, even if they made sense, that's how dumb these fucking people are.
I do want to talk about we did touch on Trump's taxes, and that was brought up in the debate because Clinton again brought up Trump's tax cuts for the rich. And I mean, Trump's tax plans, if you look at them on his website, he is lowering taxes on the ultra rich. And obviously, I mean, I don't agree with that. But he did bring up something interesting. He brought up this thing called the carried interest loophole. And that is something that allows people like Wall Street and hedge fund managers to avoid paying taxes. And Trump did call out Clinton for not doing anything to end that. And then her response was that, oh, well, I had a Republican president, so I couldn't do anything. But, I mean, Democrats, when Obama were in power, they obviously didn't do anything to end the carried interest loophole. Rabbit, what do you think about Trump's stances on taxes and the concept of tax breaks for the rich?
I oppose them. I think that, I'm pretty much in there with you. I think that, a lot of these companies and wealthy people, they're really not paying much of anything in the way of taxes, because there's so many loopholes and ways you can get out of it. More so, I think, probably for corporations, because they have more options. But I think also, though, that, you know, he made a good point, because he said that, like, you know, he was just taking advantage of a loophole that she didn't close. And she could say, oh, well, I had a Republican president. Well, you know, we can go back further than that. You know, Clinton, like, her husband was in the White House, you know, since 92, you know, and then she was also working in the Obama administration. And, you know, there were time periods in both of those when the Democrats controlled all three. You know, they controlled the House of Representatives, the Senate, and the presidency. So, you know, why didn't they make a big issue of that? And why is Hillary going to work for and give speeches to these companies that are some of the most notorious for, avoiding taxes and using these loopholes and offshoring jobs? So it's just, she's not the right person to make that argument.
What's really bad is giving tax breaks to companies that outsource. I mean, Trump does want to lower the corporate tax rate, but at the same time, he is also saying that companies who ship jobs overseas, they should have to pay a tariff. Companies that do outsource, there should definitely be a heavy tax on that.
Yeah, that's something I definitely agree with. I think it's weird how all these other countries can charge the United States with so many tariffs. You know, if you're a U.S. company and you're sending something to someone in Europe, it's like they have to pay a customs fee. They have to pay a customs fee in Canada. You know, it's ridiculous the situation the United States is in right now. It's like the country, the people of this country have been told to, like, totally forego their identities and allow their nation to just become like the Eye of Sauron or whatever, you know, the main manufacturing plant of like Atlanticism. Like, it's so fucking stupid. You know, it's like, you know, we're really just being like, you know, Donald Trump sounds like an idiot when he talks a lot of the time. But when he just goes up there and like says, you know, like, we're being robbed. These people are smarter than us. They're tricking us. We have stupid people doing things. Like, he's actually right. He's just saying it, like, in the most, bottom of the barrel, clearest way. Maybe that's the way it has to be said, but he's totally right. You know, we need new leadership.
As far as, like, the economic populism goes, I really think Trump is going as far as he can for being a Republican. I mean, obviously, he's obviously not the ideal. I mean, I would like to see, like, things like a Tobin tax on Wall Street and all kinds of things. But if you really look at the Republican Party and you compare him to people like Paul Ryan and all those types, I mean, he's pretty much the best that the Republican Party can produce.
Yeah, I mean, there's who's that guy? What is his name? Paul Nelhen?
Paul Nealon?
Challenge Paul Ryan, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird when the alt-right, you know, when that label was starting to boom, like, you know, when it was first exposed to mass media, Paul Nealon took, like, the alt-right label. Like, he was, like, defending alt-right and, like, saying, like, you know, he was against globalism or whatever. You know, it's, like, the most watered-down version of, like, alt-rightism, you know. But it was like he was like acknowledging this harder edge. So I do feel like you'll see others sort of ride the Trump train. Like, you know, some people are getting some of the Republicans are getting a bit tougher. It's not happening like totally across the board, but you see it. You know, even with like Ted Cruz, who's kind of the ultimate like conservative, him endorsing Trump. you know, does prove that, like, a new, there's a new kind of Republican Party that could exist. And I sort of see it happening, like a totally reworked Republican Party, one that's like, that's not about, you know, the sort of like limited government and the Constitution, like our values, like this thing that makes no sense. It's like
kind in of the like a, like European style nationalist party, like a Marine Le Pen.
That's what the Republican Party could be. I mean, it's funny. It's sort of like, you know, the United States in a lot of ways is like the capital of the empire or whatever, the head of the empire. And it's like, you know, the Republican Party in the United States, if that is a party that's more like a, you know, Marine Le Pen civic nationalism, even just like that kind, which is a fairly soft kind of nationalism. Like if the Republican Party became like that and defeated a globalist Democratic Party, like the change around the world would be felt, you know, because I do see what the United States does affecting the rest of the world. And I think in America that is focused in on itself and about making itself better and its people better, like a true nation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, just look at what Bill Clinton did in Serbia. I mean, Hillary could do the same thing to a European country that stands up against the against like globalism the way Serbia did.
Exactly. And it's, you know, you just see, you know, the essence of her foreign policy is just against Russia. Russia is the enemy. Because Russia is the enemy of the American empire. You know, Russia is a serious, like Russia and Eastern Europe, they are, that's like a really strong, serious, you know, defense against the empire, the, like that kind of Atlantic empire. And once Asia and South America move to the side of Eurasianist thinking, her empire will be dead. So that's why she's just everything against Russia, everything against Putin, because that's really the force that she's fighting against is totally coming from Russia. She is kind of right on that in a weird way, you know, because Russia is Russia and maybe Eastern Europe more so represent a.
So it's like a new Cold War, but the Americans are the villains.
Yeah, the villains, exactly. which is funny because war is sort of like told. We tell each other sort of tales of wars, and it's almost like film and television and the sort of simulated society of spectacle. But it's so funny that it's within this confines of like heroes and villains.
The mainstream conservatives. They also, I mean, there's a lot of them are still stuck in that whole Reagan era Cold War thing, so that a lot of them don't like Trump's soft stance towards Putin.
Yeah, but you know, they all have their own agenda.
So the healthcare issue was brought up, and there was a discussion kind of about Obamacare, and whatever you think about Obamacare, the question is like, what are the alternatives and what are the solutions? I think a lot of these, like, mainline conservative types, like Paul Ryan, their attitude is, like, if you're sick and you're broke, you can basically, like, go die in the street. And I know that sounds like Democratic talking points, but it's basically the truth. Trump's position is a little bit more nuanced. He didn't really get a chance to explain it that much in detail during the debates, but he said for the poorest people, they have to have like free healthcare. And then for everyone else, he's proposed something where bringing down like the barriers to insurance competition by a state line. And Trump's policies on healthcare, they're not perfect, but I think they're a step in the right direction over your like a mainline Republican or oppositions. As far as healthcare models go, I think there's a lot of different alternatives. The sort of American system that we have, the system that Republicans advocate, basically, if you can't afford health care, you're basically screwed. I mean, that's not acceptable. I mean, I briefly lived in England, and they have complete government health care. And, I mean, I have some observations on that. On one hand, like, you don't have situations like we do here where you have people actually die because they can't afford health care. But the downside is that the government controls healthcare completely, and there's basically like no private hospitals. Like all doctors and are state employees, and all hospitals are state owned. And if the hospitals there, they're not like a third world hospital, but they're very kind of like utilitarian. They're not. Like in America, if you can go to a private hospital, it's great. But if you can't afford that, you're screwed. So neither side.
Yeah, they have shittier quality care, but it's available to anyone who needs it.
Yeah, exactly. I think out of all countries' models, I think the Swiss healthcare model makes the most sense. It has been proposed by a. I think it's popular and generally with like a centrist. I think on both some centrists on both the Democratic and Republicans have expressed a support for that. But the way it works, the Swiss healthcare model works, is if you're poor, you get free healthcare, but there's private insurance and the government sets the rates. So the insurance companies are forced to charge as much as a person can afford. I think out of all these, and then basically you go to a private doctor, I think out of all the models, that's the most sensible. But what I'd like to ideally see is I think private insurance companies, it's basically usury. So I'd like to see insurance become like a utility where people pool their resources, and that eliminates these massive, obscene profits. Insurance itself should not be for profit, but at the same time, I also think people should be able to have like private hospitals and doctors having private practices. So that would be the best healthcare system, and I've not heard anyone propose that. But out of the mainstream models, I think the Swiss model makes the most sense. Alex or Rabbit, you want to comment?
I would just say that in my ideal situation, it's that you have the socialized healthcare, but you have it with, and it seems to work in very small, like homogenous countries. I think that once a country gets like to be big enough or like a huge enough population, especially like people coming from all over, like England is a great example of that. But then it becomes too much like it's like you're waiting in line at a post office or the DMV or something. It becomes too much of that atmosphere. But I think in like a small homogenous country that's like self-contained and like semi-controlled, I think that that it works better. I think it, like most things, it just doesn't work once it gets to be too big.
Yeah, that's the point. Is conservatives say that government or socialism is inherently bad, but it's the way it's set up. I mean, it's the culture of a society, and it's also the scale of a society. There's a lot of different factors. Conservatives and libertarians just have this kind of this mentality that anything that involves the government is automatically flawed or bad.
Yeah, they're obsessed with this idea of freedom, and I think that's what freedom does when you just blindly follow it, it leads to degeneracy, it leads to decaying society. I think there needs to be, there needs to be some idea of like, we're managing this group of people and we're building this kind of society. I think that, just basing things like get rid of the government, make everything private, make everything individually owned. It's just about this, this whole American idea of the pursuit of freedom. And while I think there is something good about individual liberty, I think the fact that we've even based our country on that principle, it's kind of like it's like a blessing and a curse, because we have these ideas of freedom. When we want to have healthcare, it becomes controversial. That's the that's the problem. It's like people would rather have freedom. They would rather have freedom and cancer than have government health insurance and have their operation fixed.
And yeah, I mean, if people are in debt to banks and they can't afford health care and they're constantly like working to kind of get by, I mean, that's not genuine freedom.
Rabbit has a good quote on what freedom is, right? Didn't you say freedom is like living in the kind of society you'd want to live in?
Yeah, I don't remember where I read that. It was like I think it was like Pat Buchanan or some said that. But yeah, that freedom isn't just like individual freedom to like to do whatever you want to do, but also freedom to live in the kind of society that you want to live in. So it's in other words, like everyone doing their own thing like that may like inhibit you from being able to do your own thing because like you're affected by what they're doing. Even if you're just out in public or whatever. So it's also like wanting to live in the kind of society that you want to live in, kind of neighborhood.
Rabbit, you wrote this article about Milo from Breitbart, and Milo is someone, he's basically kind of started out as like a mainstream Republican conservative type, and he started promoting the alt-right, and originally he was going out there, he was saying, I'm not explicitly alt-right, but I want to give them a fair say in the media, and I think he's someone who likes, he's very effective at like trolling political correctness and getting publicity, and he's been very effective at that. But Rabbit, your concern and your point in the article is you think that he's bringing in like this mainstream Republican conservative stuff into the alt-right.
Yeah, well, he's like, what he's doing is, he's good for like free speech and that kind of thing, but in a way what he's doing is bad because he is when he explains like the alt-right to people, he completely misrepresents what they are and their ideas, and in a way he actually kind of rather than pushes against the narrative, he reinforces it in his own way.
He co-opts the narrative.
He says stuff like, oh, the alt-right isn't really about, racism, or they're not into white identity and or anything like that. Like, they're into like, capitalism and egalitarianism, and they just do that other stuff to just be edgy.
Yeah, like basically like an edgier, politically incorrect version of mainstream conservatism, or the Tea Party.
Right, but at the same time, by framing it that way, he reinforces the idea that things like white racial consciousness are bad, that, identity politics is bad. You know what I mean? So he's saying they're not really like that. But, so that's like saying like, well, it's bad to be like that. So he misrepresents the ideas. And then what happens is you have all of these people either that are, fans of his or whatever, they come in to the alt-right with completely misinformed, and then it creates all kinds of strife, because you see these people, come into the alt-right and they've got like, Ronald Reagan avatars and things. Yeah. Like they think it's about libertarianism. Like, it's just like, so in a way, like, I don't want to seem like, too mean, because I think that he does do a lot for like fighting for free speech. And also, he's a very public person, so you really never know like what he really believes deep down, or if he's got
That's
some other kind of strategy.
Thing. There's
but,
these trade-offs. So Milo and Breitbart in the Trump campaign are leading to this massive increase of support for the alt-right, and I mean that's great that there's exposure to all these new people, but the downside is a lot of these people are bringing in a lot of baggage from like mainstream conservatism. And you do make some interesting points about Milo's ideology. You point out that he's a libertarian, a capitalist. You talk about you say he's supportive of a neoconservative foreign policy. And you also pointed out to this article where he supported importing foreign tech workers. But in this article, he talks about importing tech workers from China and India as a way to wage war against those countries and to cause a brain drain. So it's kind of like that invade the world, invite the world policy that like neoconservatives propose. Like, we're going to bring in all these people, but find a way to screw over other countries at the same time.
Yeah, it's not an alt-right thing to want to import, tech workers. Like, it just isn't, you know, unless you're talking about importing them maybe from, like, Russia or Poland or something like that. But, so it isn't. And then it's also the fact that one thing I really hate about these people, that they think they're going to bring in these people from China and India, and that's going to be, like, a brain drain. Like, in reality, when you bring in these intelligent people from these areas and they're smart, so they're going to be in high level positions, you know, like Microsoft has an Indian CEO, and you know, you're bringing in those people, and they don't have any loyalty to this country. So you're putting them in positions of power. Like, if anything, you're damaging like any potential solidarity of this country. And those people are going to be more inclined to do deals and,
so you're saying that
probably bringing people from the countries they came from that they probably have more loyalty to, or if they have loyalty to any country at all, we find that it just these corporations just end up having their own loyalty, especially if the CEO doesn't care about the USA. Like, so I think it's dangerous to bring in these high IQ people from China and India and just put them in positions of power here. Like, what could go wrong?
So you're saying you see that being like attached to global capitalism instantly? Like, you know, you're bringing people from other countries in, they're getting jobs here, they're rising the ranks here, they're basically having an experience of capitalism rather than the experience of a nation. And you see, just like, it's like, is that the issue you see with it? Or?
Exactly. It's just the basic Republican position, which is that, like, you know, it's no different than, like, you know, Mitt Romney or something. Like, yeah, we need to limit immigration, but we need to bring in the best and the brightest.
Yeah, rather than, like, allow us, to train our people who are here and, like, so many kids who don't have jobs. And
right. Yeah.
You also wrote about the alt-left. You have this article called A Proposal to Go Away. And the alt-left is obviously a much smaller group than the alt-right. The alt-left kind of got its start with Robert Lindsay's blog, and then you started that site, altleft.com. And there's some other alt-left bloggers who are emerging, and there's a lot of there's some Facebook groups which are fairly active. But, Rabbit, your critique is that the alt-left, you see it as becoming kind of, you make some parallel, like, you could make a parallel, like, to Breitbart, because it's like mainline kind of liberal politics, but less explicitly politically correct. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, well, in a way, you see the same exact thing, where you have, especially in this, the article that I reference, and on these Facebook groups, you see, like, them like talking about my site and things like that, like, these people, I don't think they should really be a part of the alternative left. And it's like, well, like, what are you talking about? Like, I was here before you were, you know? So like, if you don't like my ideas and don't want to be associated with them, then like, go do your own thing, you know, and you can call it whatever you want. Like,
to be fair, there's the guy who runs that group, he has a blog called Samistad Chronicles, and he actually links to my site, Stark Truth Radio, and your alt-left site. But
no, he's
I
actually like that guy, because he's somebody who, he sees like a need for an alternative left movement, but he's not like coming in and saying like, oh, these guys aren't a part of it, like, this is what it is, and so forth. Like, he's kind of like, like more trying to chronicling. I think that he's basically friendly, but it's these other people.
I plan on having him on the show, and he wrote this interesting article called "The Subtypes on the Alt Left," and he does list kind of like your wing as like a legitimate wing. But he says one of the wings is called the left wing of the alt-right, and that would probably be where, like, you would be categorized in general. But then he has I'll post a link to it. I mean, I'll go into this more in detail when I have him on.
I've read it before.
This applies to you and probably Alex and I as well. Basically, like, the alt-left, kind of like the left wing of the alt-right, and where like the alt-left and the alt-right overlap. And I think someone originally, I forget who it was, but some blogger originally said that Robert Lindsay was the left wing of the alt-right, and that's actually like the buzzword that inspired Robert Lindsay to create the alt-left.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I think I wrote that in my article too. That the and part of the reason why I have that as like a tagline too is also because I saw Lindsay use it, but also because a lot of these people that are kind of like coming into the alt left are really just people who like they want to harness like the energy of some kind of, you know, like exciting alternative movement, but they don't want to be in the alt right because they think that the that it's racist or that the people have, like, evil opinions.
They're mostly, like, Bernie supporters, and most of them dislike Hillary and see her for what she is, as this, like, a neoliberal globalist. But at the same time, like, they're very kind of, like, as you said, like, these alt-right people are all a bunch of, like, a racist.
Right, so it's like, to me with Robert Lindsay stuff, now, he isn't, like, really extreme in terms of like the kinds of solution he's more like an academic who wants to discuss these topics, but he is like, you know, I could just see him, like, if you go back and look at all his articles, you know, he has articles written about like Jewish influence and things like that, and about like, you know, being attracted to teenage girls and stuff, and like the kind of people that are joining these groups or whatnot, like they were like, you know, there was like some like Jewish guy in there who was complaining that there was like race realism and stuff in there. And it's like, okay, well, like, you know, Lindsay's been writing about these topics for like 10 years, you know? So like the kind of people that are joining now, like
they're pussies. You know,
they might be like, they're going to be throwing him right under the bus. Like they're already trying to get out the controversial opinions. And it's like, they want to create this, like, they want to harness the energy of some kind of alternative political movement, but they want to actually, you know, get rid of any ideas that could be potentially unsavory or dangerous. And to me, like, the whole point of it was to be able to discuss taboo ideas that were considered out of bounds by the mainstream right and left, you know, as part of these movements. And it doesn't mean that you have to, you know, to be a part of this, that you have to.
There was this guy, he was like a biracial neocon with a cowboy hat, and he referred to Robert Lindsay's blog as a racist, anti-Semitic, pedophiliac blog.
Yeah, so, you know, that's one of the things people in these groups or whatever tend to think like, oh my God, you know, this rabid guy is really extreme, but really, I'm not that extreme. I don't see any value in signaling against these, against white nationalism or against this other stuff, because at the end of the day, like, you know, a lot of these people are the only people who are like sticking up for the interests of white people, number one. And number two, you don't win any points by doing it. You know, like, you can see that the flack that, you know, Lindsay claims to be, you know, he claims to be an anti-racist, but if you look at his posts, like, you know, people sure aren't going to give him any credit for saying that. You know, they basically, people call amazing atheists like a Nazi and far right and stuff like that. And it's just, you don't win any points by signaling. So I just, like, you know, write what I'm going to write. So, but to me, these people coming in that are, you know, that are promoting, saying like, oh, you know, the alt left shouldn't include anything about race realism or any of that stuff. Like, get rid of that. It's like, well, dude, like, you know, this stuff was around before you got here. So you know, find your own thing and do that and call it whatever you want. Now, one thing that I did, which was smart, was that, you know, I owned altleft.com. And so, like, they're never going to be able to disassociate the alt left from me, you know, no matter how much, because the more people use the term, the more people end up at my website, like, reading about my ideas. So it's like, you know, good luck with that. Like, they can disavow me all they want, but the more they popularize the term, the more my site, like, grows in value.
One thing that you brought up is that you don't have much in common with, like, a right-wingers. You're a big fan of, like, a mid-century modern architecture, minimalist art, and you don't fit in with, like, Christian and neo-Confederate types and a lot of people on the alt-right. But the thing is, I mean, yeah, you have, like, your hardcore traditionalist types like the Trad Youth Network. But I've been noticing in the last several months there's been a big increase in interest on the alt-right for things like retrofuturism, synth wave, vapor wave. I know Richard Spencer, he has that kind of a logo, the alt-right logo, that's like a new retro wave theme. There's all these like alt-right synth wave artists. There's X-Curious. There's like Cyber Nazi. He's like 1488, but he's also like a futurist. Like, he's really into like 80s retrofuturism. What is your thought on that whole trend in the alt-right? It seems to be, maybe our show is kind of influencing that.
Well, I think that a large part of it, though, is kind of a facade, because a lot of those people who may have like adopt some of that, like, you know, vaporwave aesthetic and whatnot, like, if you go to like their you know, their blogs and what, it's just completely devoted to you know, to like attacking degeneracy and all of this stuff. If you go onto, you know, TRS forums, like, it doesn't take long to go through like a comment right on there to be like, okay, like, you know, these guys are not on the same page as me. Like, a lot of them, these are like a radical traditionalist, even though they might have like a you know, push like a vaporwave song or something, they're still like very like radically traditional. They don't make the connection between like this this like space, like space age kind of vaporwave music to but yet, you know, they go to the blog,
so you're
and they're
basically
promoting
saying,
like, these kind of traditional villages.
Like vaporwave, but we're like the female Roman bust, like, have to have like their breasts covered up.
yeah, exactly. And because, I mean, I remember seeing this one guy, and he had a really cool future, like, aesthetic, and it was like, he went by the name of like White Futurist or something. So I was like, oh, this is really cool. And then I went, like, on his Tumblr, and like the thing was like devoted to like a